This is The Morning Show on WRCO Radio. Good morning, I'm Ron Fruit. Today's program is all about 4-H, so it's going to be a very positive conversation, a conversation that can have an incredible impact on our community through its youth, and certainly families benefit too. Carlene Craddock is with us today. Carlene is Richland County's 4-H Extension Educator, and it's a perfect time to talk 4-H, but I think you'll argue, Carlene, any time is a good time to talk 4-H.
I always enjoy talking 4-H with you, Ron.
But this is an especially good time when you're wrapping up one year and you're aggressively and actively beginning a new one, aren't you?
Yes, it's a very busy time for 4-H. Like you said, we kind of wrap up the 4-H year, you know, the fair, and then we have our awards still coming up. But we're also, 4-H enrollment is open for the new year. We start in October, kicking off with National 4-H Week. And during the month of October, we really try to get the word out and let families know that now's a great time to join 4-H.
And that's true for every county around us, isn't it? This is when open enrollment for 4-H occurs.
Yes,
isn't it?
That's true. All throughout the state and throughout the country, actually, this is the time to join 4-H. You can join at any time. New families are always welcome to join, but this is kind of the time when our clubs are kicking off and doing new activities, and it's a great time for new families to get involved.
How about those members who are already in 4-H? Is their enrollment different than new families or those who may seek to be in 4-H the first time?
Yes, we do ask current members to re-enroll no later than December 1st. So we've got the months of, you know, October and November for them to choose their projects and get started in their 4-H program. And that's really important because as opportunities come up, you know, we want to be able to get information out to those kids. And if they're not enrolled in 4-H or we don't know what projects they're taking, it's hard to get that information to them.
So in other words, you're not only looking at the numbers of young people, but you're looking at what they're interested in so that you can be properly prepared.
Absolutely. We, 4-H program, we have what we call projects. And those are really the areas that kids are interested in pursuing and learning more about. It might be what they want to take to the fair, or they might learn on their own. We might match them up with a mentor so they can learn more about a project, or we have countywide project meetings. Photography is a great example. We have a lot of kids in the county who are really interested in photography, and we were able to offer two or three different workshops during this past year. We brought in a professional photographer, and she met with the kids and talked about some different techniques and different ways that they could improve their photography. And we saw some of those kids at the fair and some of the great photography that those kids were doing.
We saw blue ribbons at the fair, didn't we?
We did. And we also, and I'm excited for the second year, we picked out 13 of our photographers in the 4-H program, and we're going to be putting together a calendar again this year. So be looking for that, and that'll highlight some of the work that these kids have done.
Well, let's look back on the 4-H year in Richland County. Were there some highlights that you'd especially like to share?
Oh, there's so many highlights. I think it's different for every child, and I think that's kind of one of the, things about 4-H. A lot of families and kids, they work toward the fair, so that's always a big highlight. Everybody gets together. It's fun to see what the kids have been working on. But there's a lot of, like I said, highlights along the way. For the younger kids, we did some special Cloverbud camps and some Cloverbud activities. We actually have a new 4-H club that's all Cloverbuds this past year, and so they were doing some activities, just for that younger group. Our Cloverbuds are 5K through second graders, so they were doing, some special activities, and they were so excited, and it was fun to see some of the projects that they had been working on. And different kids, like I mentioned, the photography workshop. Kids are, so a lot of times it's their project work, or for a couple kids went on some pretty exciting trips this year through 4-H, and actually those are coming up again now if kids are interested. We had Bryn Knabel and Lucy Joyce participated in the American Spirit trip, where they had an opportunity to visit a lot of historical sites on the East Coast through a 4-H American Experience program. Space Camp is coming up, and I know that's one that we've had, we haven't been able to offer for the last couple years because of COVID, and we get questions on that one every once in a while. That's for 6th through 8th graders, and they get to go to the Space Center in Huntsville, Alabama, and they get to participate in some simulated space activities. So that's kind of an exciting opportunity for kids that they can participate in through 4-H. And those applications are actually coming up due next week. So if anyone is interested in those, they can contact the Extension office for more information.
The American Spirit Trip, I had the privilege of talking to both Bryn and to Lucy. And I think I'm remembering right that Lucy was particularly interested in the Salem witch trials, where they talked about it and it gave a whole new perspective, but she just found it very interesting. But both of them made a lot of friends. It really took them out of their comfort zones. But I think it left them stronger communicators and stronger young people because of their experience.
Yes, I think that's definitely true. In that program, they do a bus trip out there, and each of the kids are select a important historical event that they have to present in a fun, interactive way to the entire group. So you're right, they work on those communication skills, and they learn about history, and then they get an opportunity to go and visit some of those sites and see them firsthand for themselves.
COVID has been such a challenge for so many organizations, and 4-H, it was certainly a challenge, wasn't it?
Oh, it is absolutely a challenge, like you said, for everybody. You know, I try to think about the positives that we've learned from COVID, you know, now that, and I'm just excited to be back and seeing kids, you know, seeing families and 4-H members come together again and be able to have some of those hands-on experiences, which 4-H is all about.
Let's say there's somebody thinking, yes, I'd like my family to be in 4-H, but I have no idea about the projects. What would be good? How do you suggest that families figure out what is the right project for a young person, or maybe a right project for the family?
Yeah, no, I'm glad you mentioned that, because 4-H really is a family organization, and it's open to kids in 5K through the year after high school. So it's probably one of those few organizations out there that can, you know, that families can participate in together. 4-H clubs meet once a month, and they come together and they do, you know, the kids learn a little bit about how a business meeting runs with a short business meeting. And during that time, they decide on some, you know, community service activities, some ways they want to give back to the community, maybe do some fundraising and just have some fun together. So that's kind of the basic format for new families, is there's those monthly meetings. And then in addition to that, kids do get to pick projects, and there's a lot of different ways they can select that. You know, they may have a friend who's in 4-H who's doing something that they're, you know, really excited about that they decide they want to do as well. I encourage families to give us a call at the Extension office. I'm happy to talk with them about, you know, what are your kids' interests? And maybe there's a club that would be a better match for them based on what their kids' interests are. Like, for example, the horse program. You know, we have a couple of clubs that have members in the horse project. So if their child is really interested in participating in horses, I would suggest possibly joining one of those clubs if they want, just to have that, you know, support and that with other kids. And it's fun too to see what projects kids come up with. We recently did the 4-H open house during National 4-H week, and we try to represent some different projects, maybe some ones folks don't realize are traditional 4-H, because a lot of times people think, you know, it's all animals or it's all, you know, cooking and sewing, but it's really not, and kids have an opportunity to do a lot of different things. This year we had a couple of kids who were really excited about Legos, and we had an app there where they could scan it and, you know, pick create a Legos project based on a pile of Legos. And then there was a young man who does Lego animation, and he taught the kids how to, you know, how you move it just a little bit, and he had an app on his phone, and how you can create a video with your Legos animation. So that was kind of exciting and different, you know, and probably not something you traditionally think about, but something that he was just really excited about, and he was able to share with other kids. And it was fun to watch the other kids, like, they'd never seen that before, and they got a chance to try it. I think, like I said, one of the great things about 4-H is it's real hands-on. So
learning by doing.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we had an older 4-H member who shared it with some young kids who'd never seen it before, and they got a chance to try it, and they were really excited about it. So that was one of those fun experiences. So we have lots of projects, like I mentioned. Getting back to your question, that was a long answer to a short question. But yeah, 4-H offers really a lot of projects. Of course, the animal projects are real strong here in Richland County. Cooking, sewing, photography, we've already mentioned. But there's also like natural resources, shooting sports, just like Legos, STEM. You know, I'd love to get a STEM program started. I think there's just a real interest in that. Even if it's just like a short term, you know, if there's a volunteer who'd be willing to do like 6 weeks, you know, once a week with kids for 4 to 6 weeks, something like that, just to give those kids that opportunity of some hands-on activities and to look through the, you know, there's some curriculum out there and some information that we could kind of come together and see what we could could build out and provide that opportunity for kids.
As a 4-H'er, I could choose just one project, or I could choose multiple projects, couldn't I?
That is true. And kids do tend to do that. You know, they really... one thing we talk about in 4-H is, what are your sparks? You know, what are you really excited about? And how can we help you, you know, learn about whatever that might be? And for a lot of kids, you know, they'll pick two or three projects. Some of them pick more. And they just, you know, take advantage of learning opportunities that are available through those areas.
If I only take one project in 4-H, am I considered slacking, or do I, you know, how do I get the most out of it? I mean, if I really like, you know, leathercraft, for lack of a better example, if I devote myself to that, can I still be a strong, contributing, benefiting 4-H'er?
Oh, absolutely. You know, like I said, it's really about what your interests are, you know, time that you have available to contribute. You know, I know there's a lot of opportunities out there for kids. And I would encourage them to, you know, narrow it down to what they're most interested in, rather than trying to do so many things and finding they just don't have the time.
So as I move through the 4-H year, I attend meetings, mm-hmm. but I also learn to give a demonstration, don't I?
Yes, you do. You remember from your 4-H
yes,
days,
do.
Don't you, Ron?
Yeah.
Yes, we do. We really encourage kids to develop some of those skills of, you know, being able to organize around usually one of their project areas, but not necessarily, and to teach others. So they give a brief demonstration. You know, we try to keep it, you know, pretty low key, but also, you know, helping them develop some of those public speaking skills. And, you know, it's interesting talking to 4-H alumni, how those are the things they remember and how much looking back they appreciate the fact that even though it was really scary at the time, that was a really valuable skill that they learned through 4-H.
Your first one was the hardest, the second one not so bad. After that, it got progressively easier, and that's the whole motive of 4-H, isn't it?
Yes, that's very true. I still remember my first 4-H demonstration.
What was it on?
It was a cooking demonstration, and I don't remember the content as much as how nervous and how difficult it was for me to do.
But it's in front of an encouraging audience, typically with parents and fellow members there.
Yes.
But it's an invaluable experience.
It is. It's a wonderful experience, and probably the one that 4-H members, you know, sort of dread the most, but maybe gain the most from.
Which I think is absolutely true, and it takes some encouragement. But if you're a first-year 4-H member, at least if it was like I was in 4-H, you went several meetings before the first-year people did it. So you had a chance to see what others did and to learn and to benefit before you were standing up in front of the club.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And yeah, you, like you said, you got a chance to learn from those older 4-H members who'd had an opportunity to do it before.
And when, of course, times have changed significantly from the time I was in 4-H, but you got a lot of materials, you had books, you had resources. Is 4-H providing that to families today so that they feel like they have a roadmap through their project work?
You know, I grew up in that era too, when we used project bulletins really a lot to provide that educational material. Now we find there's really a mix in how kids learn about their projects. With the internet, you know, and, you know, printed publications maybe aren't as available in all projects. Really try to provide, if we can, some workshops or other ways kids can learn about it. And of course, you know, those 4-H leaders who provide that, the workshops and the information and training for kids, or mentors.
Is there uniformity in projects? And by that I mean, let's say that kids all across the state are taking woodworking and they're in their first year. Would they all have an option to make the same project, or would they determine themselves what they would make?
Currently, they would determine themselves
to
make. Yeah, we're the state has recently come out with some new guidelines for project leaders who are working with kids, and they give them, like, these are some of the basic skills, you know, the kids might want to develop, but the actual project that the kids make they get to determine that along with the adult who's helping them with that project.
That's a change from what it used to be too, isn't it? Where everyone kind of had the same kind of project.
Yeah, I think when you went to the fair and the, you know, a few years ago, there was more uniformity in what kids were making.
But I think it is an enhancement or an enticement for young people to make what they'd like to make or what they feel comfortable in creating.
Yeah, and what they're really interested in, too. So,
The projects that young people choose then, that's a year commitment, isn't it? So that next year maybe I take something entirely different, or maybe I stay with what I'm doing.
Yeah, and I think we find both to be the case. You know, we find a lot of kids who, for example, are in the horse project or in the beef project, they'll probably start that at a relatively young age, you know, not kindergarten maybe, but you know, and they will follow that through their entire 4-H career. They may try an art project one year and they might love it and stay with it, or they might decide, oh, the next year I want to try something different, and that's totally fine.
So when do the meetings start then? Is it in January, or because you're enrolling right now, you take November off, don't you, or not?
No.
Silly.
We never take well, 4-H, a lot of clubs do their wrap-up in October and November. Some of them have like a local awards program. But 4-H really goes year-round. If they were to take a month off, some do take December off, just with the holidays and everything else that's going on. They may not be meeting in December. But yeah, a lot of clubs, you know, now is a great time to get started in a club, whether it be October, November. Some of them are doing special fall activities and kind of kick off and welcoming new families. So it's a great time.
Well, and some, if conditions allow, will do caroling or do other community service projects during the holidays, too.
Yes, they do. They do bell ringing, and they do, you know, used to be host a family, but there's other opportunities that are similar to that. I know I was at a 4-H meeting last night, and they were planning what they would do, you know, to help out with that. There's the Rotary Lights in the Park. A lot of our 4-H groups do that, or they may volunteer at that event. So a lot of opportunities to, you know, be a part of our community, give back to our community, especially during the holidays, but throughout the year.
You were just mentioning last night, clubs meet different days, different places, different times, don't they?
They do, and that's another factor, too. I mean, why I encourage families to give us a call at the Extension office, or we have, you know, I can send them a brochure that shows where all the clubs meet. So there's a club near, you know, throughout the county, different locations, but also they do meet at different times. And so, you know, there might be a time that's better for your family. And so we can kind of help match you up with what works best for you.
If I live in Richland County, am I eligible to join any Richland County 4-H club?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's why I mentioned, you know, some clubs are maybe stronger in one project area or another. You might have to travel a little farther to get there, but you are welcome to join anywhere.
Are county borders strict when it comes to 4-H, Carlene?
Yes and no. Not really. I mean, you can live outside of the county and be part of a Richland County 4-H club. You can't belong to a Sauk County 4-H club and a Richland County 4-H club. So you have to choose one or the other. But yeah, we definitely have kids, you know, from outside the county who are participating in Richland County 4-H if that works for their family. I'm sure we have kids also that live within the county that may be participating in another county program.
And that makes sense. Maybe my friends at school, they're all in Grant County, so I want to be in Grant County 4-H,
yes,
or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we see different schools represented at the fair, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. That's true. You know, part of what we try to encourage in 4-H is that sense of belonging. And like you mentioned, if you have friends that are in another program, you know, that might be a great fit for your family. You know, they go with their friends and they become a part of, you know, that group and that sense of, you know, they build that sense of community within that club.
Carlene Craddock is our guest on the morning show today on WRCO Radio. Our conversation is all about 4-H. Now is the time to be involved. We'll take a short break and come back and visit with Carlene Moore on the morning show today here on WRCO FM. Carlene Craddock is our studio guest on the morning show today on WRCO Radio. Carlene serves our county as the 4-H Extension Educator. We were talking about projects, and it may seem like some just absolutely fit. If Dad was a photographer, we have access maybe to his camera and those kinds of things. But 4-H is trying to open doors with some innovative programs that I think are just excellent, and I know you agree, Carlene.
Yes, it's true. I mean, we have an opportunity to really offer kids some experience experiences that they may not have, you know, even thought were a possibility for them.
Well, let's talk about that. Beef has kind of been a forerunner in that category, hasn't it?
They have, and it's really been exciting to watch. Both 4-H and FFA have partnered with the beef producers who've started their beef heifer program, and it's been really exciting to watch it over the past few years as it's starting to grow and develop. We've seen a lot more kids get involved in the project, maybe some kids who wouldn't traditionally be involved in the beef project. Through the mentorship program, they're able to partner with maybe a local producer, and you know, even if they don't have the facilities to keep an animal at their home, they may be able to still participate in the beef project.
Is it heifers? Is it steers? Could it be either, Carlene?
Well, actually, they have two programs. They started out with the steer project, and they help kids who want to raise a market steer to purchase that animal, and then that's a loan program which they pay back after the fair and the meat animal sale. But more recently, they've started the Beef Heifer Project, which has really taken off this past year, and they've had a lot of kids participate. And that program, the beef producers will help kids purchase up to $1,000 for a beef heifer to really get them started in the beef, you know, local beef production and start their own herd. And there are some things that the kids have to do to participate in that. They are asked to, they need to keep the health records and the financial records. They need to help out in the beef wagon, which is where the money comes from to help this program. So those of you who, you know, are buying a sandwich at the beef wagon, you're really helping, you know, the beef producers offer programs for young kids to get started in the beef industry. But then they need to show that animal at the fair. There's probably a couple of things I'm forgetting. But then as they participate in that program, they need to continue for 3 years, and at the end of that 3 years, that $1,000 does not need to be repaid. So that child, you know, can really get started, and it's been fun to watch. I know there's a young man who's just really excited about starting his own herd someday, even before we started talking about the heifer program, and he was in the program this past year, and it's been really fun to watch him and hear his mom tell stories about, you know, how this program has impacted his life and how he's, you know, really getting started in the industry.
With the heifer program, you know, raising replacements, you know, are there those I could work with if I live in town and have no place for an animal, Carlene?
Yes, they do have mentors as part of that program. Matter of fact, that is one of the requirements, is they do want to match them up with a local beef producer to help them get started, to help select, you know, the animal. And now is the time really to get started in that. Applications are open now through December 1st, and then they'll be making the decision on which youth they'll be working with this next year. And then when we do the weigh-ins in January and February, those animals will have to be a part of that to be, you know, identified and permanently, you know, tattooed, I think.
So that usually happens in January, doesn't it?
It's the last Saturday in January, right? And the first Saturday in February is when we do the weigh-ins for the steers. But sure, we're also going to be identifying the heifers this year, just that are part of the program. And then they'll track with those, you know, animals for the next 3 years. And, oh, the kids also get an opportunity to present at the annual beef producers meeting about, you know, their project and what they've been doing and how it's been going.
I think it's an outstanding program. One, I think it affords opportunities where you have mentors and youth. It's wonderful to work with your own child. But I think there's some real value in being able to go out there and forge some relationships. So hats off to the beef producers for helping young people understand where their food comes from and giving them opportunities that just simply couldn't exist otherwise.
Yes, it's a very exciting program.
And also then it's being extended to sheep, if I understand correctly, right?
That's true. The Richland Area Sheep Producers organization started talking this past year, you know, that maybe modeling a program similar to what the beef producers are doing and really get some kids involved in the sheep project too, which is a great project, especially for younger kids, you know, maybe that haven't been involved in animal projects, but they're interested. You know, a sheep project is a great place to start, and they could be involved in the sheep producers project. And those deadlines, animal ownership deadlines are a little later, so there's still some time to be thinking about that, maybe talking to your parents about it if you're interested. And and then give us a call at the extension office and we can help connect you with local sheep producers members and to find out more about the program.
I just think it's really a great opportunity, and it demonstrates, though, how critically important adult volunteers or engaged adults wanting to help youth are to the success of 4-H.
Yes, that is absolutely true, Ron. And I know you and I have talked about this before, but, you know, we wouldn't be able to offer 4-H without the volunteers who give back of their time and their interests. You know, all of us as adults have things that we're really excited about, and it's fun to be able to share that with young people. To be able to, you know, as you said, pass along that knowledge and you know, help them develop those interests. You know, it's always fun. I enjoy because we do 4-H volunteers do go through a screening process like any youth organization. You know, we do background checks and we do an orientation. And so we do that. There is that process that needs to happen if you want to be a volunteer. But we are, you know, always looking for folks who'd be interested in helping teach kids, whether it be at the club level, you know, maybe it's, you know, being being at a workshop, you know, and helping, you know, share what your passion is with kids and teaching and share, passing along that knowledge.
But I think of the strength of our rabbit projects over the years. Boy, there have been a lot of engaged adults, mm-hmm. but there have been some incredible, just outstanding work done by project members.
Yes, and it's, you know, it's fun to watch those kids grow up in the project, you know, and quite often they'll start out as a shy young member, you know, and maybe not have a lot of knowledge. And as they work through it, you know, they not only gain knowledge on their own, but as they become older, we have, you know, the youth leadership. And I think that's one of the really exciting things to watch is those kids who are middle school and high school starting to give back and teaching the younger kids. And that's kind of the model, especially like in the rabbit group. I know they have a brief educational program at each of their meetings, and it's usually those older members who are teaching, you know, about different breeds or characteristics or, you know, might be diseases or whatever it might be. You know, there's a brief educational program and it's led by those older members.
But then we look at poultry. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be in a 1,200-pound steer. It may be a 2-pound chicken, but there's some, I think, just leadership and, you know, the requirements that are involved in the project. There are similarities regardless of the size of the animal or bird.
Yes, absolutely. You know, you're learning those, that responsibility of caring for that animal and learning about that species too. And, you know, there's a lot of skills that come along with not just, you know, learning about the project itself.
Well, I think of rabbits again and just what you need to know in showmanship, where the judge is quizzing you on the the rule book and the species book and all these types of things. If you've never watched the judging, sometimes I think we underestimate what 4-H'ers know and the work they do to prepare for the fair and these shows.
Yes, you're right, Ron. It's to be standing behind a young person who is talking with the judge and answering those questions, the amount of knowledge that they've gained and being able to communicate that, it's really something.
How do you know where to get supplies and materials for 4-H projects? Is there help in that regard? If, you know, maybe sourcing things or figuring out how to get started, Carlene?
Well, that really depends on the project. You know, like you had mentioned, the 4-H publications, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes there's some suggestions in those. If you're working with a mentor, you know, there's always that relationship and they can help you get connected. And something that kind of came out of COVID is sort of the project kit idea. And we've done some of those over the past few years too, where maybe we'll pull together the supplies. During COVID, we may have offered the workshop on Zoom. You know, they pick up a box, you know, 4-H in a box kind of concept. And if you want to, right now, I have some cake decorating kits in my office that I'd love to, you know, give out to some young person who's interested in cake decorating. So sometimes, and we've done that too statewide, where we'll offer a Zoom workshop and we'll give the kids the supplies or the recipes, and then they'll join us on Zoom and we'll do the project together. So lots of different ways to acquire those materials.
Well, I think it's interesting, and I'll call them the dioramas. Is that still a correct title?
Yes.
the little tendon, you know, how you make a corn stalk out of whatever it happens to be, you know, where they create these farm scenes, or it could be something else, but making them as realistic as possible. There's a lot there. I'm always impressed by
those. I know. Those are fun to look at when you come to the fair. The amount of work that goes into those dioramas is just amazing. But again, you know, I know a few years ago, Julie Frazier and her, you know, sons were involved in that diorama project. They offered a workshop at our 4-H Discovery Day on creating dioramas, or they did a separate workshop, I think the year before, really to do that, to help those kids who were really excited about dioramas. You know, how do you create those little tiny pieces that, you know, are part of that display, or where can you purchase some of those supplies? So, yeah, a lot of times through workshops and talking with other members and other 4-H leaders is kind of how that all comes together.
But I think of like our Model Railroad Club, you know, it's really similar to what they do when they create these displays with their trains. There are lots of opportunities for adults to give to 4-H if they'd like to make a difference in a young person's life.
That's so true. And we would love, you know, I would love to talk with anyone who's interested or thinking maybe, you know, it might be just a few hours or a workshop, or maybe, you know, you want to become a 4-H volunteer and go through the screening, you know, the background checks and the whole deal. And really, you know, you can meet with kids on an ongoing basis, or you can meet with kids on just a short-term basis. So a lot of opportunities for adults who want to, you know, reach out and share with kids.
Carlene Craddock is here on the morning show today on WRCO Radio. In front of me, I have what looks like a very busy calendar. We're going to talk about some of those highlights, and we'll also talk about the annual 4-H banquet, which is an important event in our community. And we'll do that in just a moment on today's morning show from WRCO FM. It's a 4-H morning show today on WRCO Radio. A number of 4-H'ers have had just simply an outstanding year. We're celebrating that today, and we're encouraging others to think about that same journey that they could be on with their family in the new year. Carlene Craddock is here today. She is Richland County's 4-H Extension Educator. You mentioned that 4-H clubs meet typically monthly. Are those the only meetings then that a 4-H'er is involved in, or can there be project meetings? Or I'm thinking like there's the, is the quality assurance program, like the meat animals young people participate in, Carlene?
So, well, our 4-H clubs are kind of the base.
That's where it starts.
Yes. And then from there, you can expand, you know, depending on your interests. We talked a little bit about projects earlier, and there may be project meetings that you would attend in addition to that. A lot of clubs also do some kind of community service and giving back. So those might be in addition to, or they might be, you know, they might happen during club meetings. Or maybe the club meeting would happen at a different location to accommodate the community service, whether it be, you know, some clubs do communities do cemetery cleanup or roadside cleanup, or, you know, all different ways they give back to the community. And then other opportunities, and they also do recreation and have fun together. So it might be a bowling party. So maybe their club meeting that month will be at the, you know, at the bowling alley, and they'll all go bowling together. So club meetings, like I said, are kind of the base. And then beyond there, you know, it's kind of what your interests are and what your, you know, availability is as far as, you know, participating in additional activities. You did mention the meat animal sale requirements, and those are the education requirements that kids are need to do in order to sell an animal at the fair. Those are sometimes in-person meetings. Pre-COVID, those were pretty much all in-person meetings, but now we really have a variety of ways that kids can meet those, whether it be some online seminars where they write a brief summary about what they learn. Of course, online, I mean, in-person, you know, we did a livestock clinic, extremely well attended this past summer. You know, there's a lot of different ways that kids can meet those requirements of how they will learning about their project in order to be able to sell that animal.
Then we hear about 4-H ambassadors. We hear about 4-H junior leaders. These are opportunities above and beyond my regular membership in 4-H, correct?
Yes, those are some opportunities for older kids. Seventh grade and above can join our countywide junior leader group. and they have a lot of fun together. Their fun and service is kind of their what their goals are, and they do both. They also help with a lot of the countywide events. You know, they help out with the Cloverbud Fair and some of the activities during the Richland County Fair, and really do a lot of leadership development within that group. So really enjoy working with those folks. And then the 4-H ambassadors are some of the kids who really want to take it that next step, who are, you know, maybe enjoy public speaking or telling their 4-H story. So our ambassadors also help out. You know, often they'll talk with you on the radio, mm-hmm. or talk during the fair. You know, they'll help out with our open house events, and really maybe they'll be the MC at our arts festival or different events like that, where they have an opportunity to maybe speak out and further develop their public speaking skills.
You mentioned 4-H being fun. If it wasn't fun, it would fail, wouldn't it?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Because you think about all the people who remember playing 4-H softball, or they went to 4-H camp, or they did, you know, they had a chance, mm-hmm. to do one of the trips. Fun was incredibly a part, and maybe one of the best memories of 4-H.
Yeah, I mean, we really try to incorporate fun and learning together, you know. Hopefully that's happening at all levels of 4-H. You know, a lot of our 4-H clubs do special activities. I'm always excited during our Leaders Association meetings. We have a chance for club reports and to hear some of the activities that they're doing. You know, some of the fun things they're doing at their club meetings. Might be just a silly game or something like that, but it really, you know, you don't want to just go to a business meeting. You do some other activities as well. Then, like you mentioned, one of my favorite 4-H activities during the summer is 4-H camp. You know, we get 3 days away at Upham Woods, which is in the Wisconsin Dells area. We have a good number of young people who participate in that, as well as camp counselors who have that opportunity to take on that leadership role and be a part of our camp.
Has the deadline for record books come and gone?
Well, we're kind of in the midst of that right now, Ron. They'll be turned into the Extension Office next week. So, but each club sets their own deadline, because usually they'll turn them into their club leader. The club leaders review them and give the kids some feedback, and then they pick some of the outstanding record books. They all come to the office, but they will nominate some of the record books from their club for the outstanding awards, which we'll be giving out at the banquet coming up.
So, and that was going to be my question. Is that record book one of the pieces of criteria that determines who receives an award at the annual banquet?
So we actually give different awards at the banquet, but that is definitely one of the ones, you know, to highlight some of those outstanding record books. And we always have a table out where, you know, families can come. You know, there's a lot of activities going on at the annual awards program, but one of them is that table with those outstanding record books, and it's fun to go through them and see just the many activities. And a lot of times there's photos and, you know, short write-ups about, you know, what their 4-H experiences are, and it's really, you know, a lot of fun to see what the kids have been doing during the past year.
So does the club general leader have the first look at the record books, and then are there others who make decisions on prizes and recognition for those who've gone above and beyond?
So, you know, each club decides. Our fairly large clubs probably have a committee of parents who help out with that, because that would be a lot to go through. I mean, some of these kids are pretty active, and these books can get, you know, pretty extensive. So, so at the club level is the first look, and then they do come into the office, and we also have another group that goes through them as well. So, yeah.
Because those sometimes can be, they're almost like the resume for a trip, can't they?
They are. As a matter of fact, that is one of the requirements for our kids who are applying for funding. Through the Leaders Association helps, you know, pay the costs for some of the kids who are attending these trips, like we mentioned earlier. Because they do get to be pricey for families. And so the Leaders Association, through fundraising, helps to provide some, you know, for some of the funding for those trips. And the 4-H record book is definitely a strong criteria in what that group and what that committee will look at.
Well, there will be a number of 4-H members who will be recognized when you have your banquet coming up in November. But you'll also recognize adults, volunteers, and others, won't you?
We do. We give out a number of awards. And as a matter of fact, just put a shout out right now to 4-H families who are out there. This is a great time to nominate, you know, maybe the 4-H leader in your club, or maybe it's a friend of 4-H. It might be a local business or a community organization that's really supported your child, your club. And at the office, at the extension office, we don't always know who all those folks are. So the nominations are open right now for that. All families are going to be getting an email probably tomorrow with a link. So yeah, we encourage families to nominate for Friend of 4-H. Our 4-H Leader of the Year Award is coming up, and also the Youth Leadership Awards. So, you know, recognizing those teens who've maybe, you know, gone above and beyond to in a leadership role in your club, whether it be a club officer or helping out younger members, or, you know, maybe helping out the club leader. So we'll do that. Another fun award that we give out is the Cloverbud Graduates. So we recognize not only our older 4-H members who are graduating from 4-H, but we also call the Cloverbuds forward, those kids who are in second grade, you know, going, or in, they'll be in third grade now, but graduating to full membership, because the way 4-H is structured is our younger kids, we call them Clover Buds. You know, we do activities that are developmentally appropriate for those. So they're like kind of our younger members, and then regular members start at third grade. So we kind of recognize that graduation.
Richland County also has a 4-H Hall of Fame, doesn't it?
We do. We have a Hall of Fame award, and that is given to one of our 4-H leaders who's been in leadership for the longest.
Which really is it's an incredible award, isn't it?
It really is. So I don't know who that person is yet. So I wouldn't reveal it if I did, because we will be announcing that at the banquet,
which is one of many fine awards given out that
Yes. night. And it's not just about the awards. It's really kind of a fun family event. It's a celebration of the past year and all that, you know, that has taken place as well. We have activities for the kids. Our junior leader group is doing the kids activities this year. They're going to, the theme for our banquet is a trip to Italy. So we have kind of a pot. We're going to do a pasta bar with different types of pasta, including mac and cheese for the young kids. So, you know, it'll be a fun family event. There will be some fun activities for the kids. There will be a photo booth and, of course, the awards program. So a lot going on that evening. That's going to be November 6th at the community center.
Which is a Sunday evening, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it is.
Okay, yeah. As 4-H is family-oriented, with families encouraged to be a part, for your annual awards banquet, families are encouraged to attend as a family, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I mean, supporting the members from your club or maybe, you know, a member of your family who's receiving an award, as well as just, you know, coming and having a good time together.
Well, when you think about getting ready for next year, what makes you optimistic and excited for Richland County 4-H, Carlene?
Oh, I'm always excited about 4-H. But yeah, enrollment is, you know, it's a great time to, you know, rethink about, you know, what do we want to do in the upcoming year. I'm meeting with the 4-H Leaders Association tonight and starting to already plan for 2023 as far as, you know, our 4-H Discovery Day is a big event, you know, where families can come. You don't even have to be in 4-H, but really discover some of those 4-H projects. You know, we try to have a lot of different project areas. So we'll be thinking about that and really just planning for the new year and all the activities and learning experiences we'll have for kids.
That typically is in February, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is. 4-H members haven't, or families have until March 1st to sign up for projects. So we try to have it before that March 1st deadline. Hopefully we won't get snow, because we have been snowed out before and managed to reschedule. But yeah, it gives kids a chance to maybe try a new project that they weren't familiar with or weren't really sure they wanted to do. But we encourage them to, you know, sign up for those projects now when you do your enrollment. But it's still, you can still add projects or, you know, maybe change your projects up until March 1st.
So if I'm nervous about saying, I'm not sure which project I would like for that, you know, to get my enrollment in right away, no worries then.
Right, exactly. You can enroll now, you know, sign up for what you're thinking you want to do, and maybe you find another opportunity along the way. It's not too late to add that.
When we think about the cost for families to participate in 4-H, a lot of the costs are depend on the project I choose, don't they, Carlene?
Yes. You know, cost to participate in 4-H is pretty minimal just to be a member, but then that does go up depending upon, you know, what projects you want to do. Obviously, if you're doing a, like, a, if you're raising a steer, there's going to be costs involved in that. You know, art and photography, it'll be cost of supplies, basically. Or maybe a workshop fee of $5. We really do try to keep it to a minimum as best we can to make 4-H available to all families.
But I think how things have changed. I think a lot of students today use their phones, don't they, to take pictures?
They do. And that's, you know, one of the techniques that we, you know, we talk about in these workshops is you don't have to have a fancy camera to participate in photography. You can do beautiful photography. You know, it's interesting because they do label them, you know, when they enter them, what kind of device they use to take those pictures. And kids are getting beautiful pictures using their phones.
That being the case, there are projects that would have very minimal investment. The investment is in time, effort, and creativity, isn't it?
That is true.
Well, for people who are interested, certainly they could visit a club, I think, at any time, couldn't they?
Yeah, we encourage them to visit one or two clubs, you know, and find one that really fits a good time. And maybe, you know, maybe your child has friends in that group or, you know, whatever criteria is important to your family.
Well, and then in terms of, you know, who's eligible, let's recap that again, because it's really for the youngest. But with the youngest, they are still in Clover Buds, aren't they?
Well, yes.
You talked about that 5K.
5K through second grade is our younger kids. And we do more non-competitive, you know, group activities. A lot of clubs maybe have a separate Clover Buds group where the kids don't sit through the business meeting, but they just, you know, do maybe a separate activity that would be really appropriate for that age group. It's a fun learning, a hands-on activity during the time that the other kids are at their club meeting. So the whole family can come, you know, the younger kids can do their activity and the older kids can participate in the 4-H meeting.
Do any of the clubs in the county still have a club fair or a club tour or something like that, Carly?
That's a great question. Yeah, we do have some club fairs. I don't know of any clubs that have club tours. And it's interesting. I was thinking about that because that was a big event when I was in 4-H. And I, from looking at your face, I'm guessing that, you know, the club fair was a lot, or the club tour was a lot of fun too, where we would go from one family's home to the next and the kids would show their gardens and their, you know, their animal projects and so forth.
Well, it was interesting because I was in the Sabin Live Wires 4-H club and we had a club fair. Mm-hmm. And it was quite a deal, you know, with a potluck meal and everyone came and so forth. But then the Viola Busy Beavers, who were our neighbors, were in that, and some of our cousins, they had a club tour, and you always knew what day it was because there was this parade of cars that went by, you know, as they went from, you know, in that case, farm to farm or home to home. But those qualified as public exhibitions of your project for which you need to achieve.
Yes, they do. So one of the things that we encourage kids to do is not only to sign up for projects, but to do some kind of a public showing of what you've learned throughout the year. Excuse me. So it might be the club fair, it might be the county fair. You know, there might be other opportunities for you to show others what you've been working on and what you've learned.
It's just an extension of the 4-H experience, isn't it?
That is true, yes.
Sounds good. Anything you'd like to add in conclusion to our conversation today, Carlene?
I'd just like to, you know, invite families who are maybe thinking about 4-H or would like more information. They can give us a call at the Extension office, 608-647-6148. And we'd be happy to send you a brochure that lists all the clubs in the county and when they meet, or I'd be happy to talk with you. You know, feel free to reach out, send me an email. I'd be happy to, you know, help you learn more about what 4-H has to offer for your child.
And I think I'm remembering right, but congratulations to the Jar family on finding the medallion this year.
Yes, they did. It was so fun to see the kids come in. They were really excited. just one more, you know, kind of fun activity that we did.
During National 4-H Week.
Yep. Yeah.
I had this gut feeling as I read the clues. Of course, I had the advantage because I could read them all at once, where everyone else had to do them one at a time. But I thought, okay, that's got to wind up pretty close to the Boaz Park.
I was going to say, how many clues did it take you to figure out where it might be?
Well, I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, so I think I read all five.
Okay.
But I thought, well, that's a great opportunity. And the other thing I thought is, you know, what a great location Boaz has been for ball games and special things. And, you know, it was just a really good 4-H spot to have the medallion hidden in.
Yeah, we have a couple 4-H clubs who meet at the community center there. And a little background on the medallion hunt, but that was actually, the clues were written by a couple of our 4-H junior leaders.
Oh, good.
They did a great job.
They did. Well, and that's all about that learning, isn't it?
Yep.
Have you ever stopped to consider where you'd be today without 4-H?
Oh, wow. That's a question I've never thought of. As you and I have talked in the past, you know, I grew up in a fairly strong 4-H program. Both my parents were 4-H leaders. And I was a 4-H ambassador and knew at an early age what I would really like to do someday is work with 4-H. So it's been a big part of my life throughout.
Did it have an impact on you in college? I mean, at the time, did you think, okay, this program is helping me achieve in other areas besides just 4-H? Or did it take a few years? And then, you know, looking back in hindsight, the rearview mirror, do you see that, Carlene?
Actually, I remember the moment that I knew that I wanted to work with 4-H. I was a camp counselor, and I looked up at my 4-H agent at the time, and I said, he's got the best job in the world. That's what I want to do someday. And so I went into college with the intent of, you know, working with 4-H. There is no degree for 4-H work, so I've got an education degree. That's my background. I went into it in an education degree, but more of a slant toward non-formal education. So I knew I never wanted to be in the classroom. I wanted to work in non-formal education settings. So yeah, it's had a big impact on me throughout. And, I worked with 4-H for several years right out of college and then took some time off, and now I'm back and I love what I do.
Well, I think every 4-H leader can consider themselves an educator. I certainly consider you one, and I think all the project leaders are educators, with the goal being to leave the community a better place than what it was before the 4-H year started.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of what 4-H is all about, you know, providing that education and community support for kids.
Will you have the calendars for sale again this year? You mentioned earlier in the program you've chosen the photos and the photographers to be featured.
Yes, we will. Those will be available, hopefully in time, you know, for Christmas gifts and so forth. You know, we also had the plat book that 4-H does as a fundraiser, you know, to help raise money for all these programs that we're offering. So yeah, we've got a brand new plat book that just came out, and those are available both at the extension office and locations around town. You can get them at Walsh's and other spots. So yeah, we appreciate the support for, you know, folks who are purchasing those items, and some of that money comes back to help support 4-H programs.
Sounds good. Well, good luck for a good year upcoming.
Thank you so much, Ron.
You're welcome. Carlene Craddock has been our guest today. Carlene is Richland County's 4-H Extension educator and would be happy to answer any question that your family might have with regards to 4-H. Thanks for joining us. We'll return with more on the program tomorrow.